Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
And now, thankful Kevin Harlan was there to document history, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay, right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Proudly brought to you, excuse me, all choked up about it, by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson, I-29, just south of the airport. Check it out. The 2022s are rolling in. Get yours right now. It is time. The 22s are there. Go check them out. Beautiful Harley-Davidson motorcycles, new and used. Like I said, the brand new 22s are there for you to check out. And, of course, nobody does a better job of getting you financed, and nobody does a better job on your trade. In fact, you can get a cash offer right now at Worth Harley-Davidson. Find them online, WorthHarleyDavidson.com, in person, I-29, just south of the airport. Much to get to today. The Chiefs victorious, moving on, you know, like they do. Yawn, yet another playoff victory for the Chiefs. I don't think they're ever yawners, are they? I mean, there is an expectation. No. People were upset when the Chiefs were not playing well early in that game. There are expectations, no doubt. But the Chiefs, as you heard there, Andy Reid calling a masterpiece. We will talk about it with one Sam McDowell in the 3 o'clock hour. 2-minute drill at 4, Adam Schefter talking all of the NFL. In the 4 o'clock hour as well. Trent Green in the 5. He called the game with Kevin Harlan on Westwood 1, so we'll get his thoughts on the game in the 5 o'clock hour. But just to put it into perspective, 5 touchdown passes thrown within how much real game time, Curtis?
11 minutes and 30 seconds. Exactly.
11 minutes and 30 seconds the Chiefs threw 5 touchdown passes. From when the first one was thrown to when the fifth one was thrown. Actual game time. That's the Steelers' time of possession in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. That is absolutely insane.
It defies description. I mean, it really does. I mean, because you try to think of what the word would be. And regardless of what you come up with, you're like, yeah, that doesn't do it. Amazing, staggering. It just doesn't matter. He threw his first touchdown pass. The ball was snapped with 5 minutes and 50 seconds left to go in the second quarter. 4-yard touchdown pass to Jerick McKinnon. He threw his fifth touchdown pass with 9 minutes and 20 seconds to go in the third quarter. That is 5 touchdown passes in 11 minutes and 30 seconds of game time. And if you want to fold in his work on the 6th possession, in which he did, which ended in touchdown pass but not his, in those 6 touchdown drives, 23 of 26, 357, 5-0. The words just don't exist to describe what he did yesterday.
No, they don't. And he became the first quarterback ever. Right? Now think about this when I'm going to put it into perspective of who he's in the running with. Most games with 400 passing yards and 5 touchdowns, he's the first one ever with 4. Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, and Joe Montana have 3. He's already there. By the way, he's had 72 career starts. This is both regular season and playoffs. He's had 72 career starts. Joe Montana had 3 over the course of 187. Marino had 3 over the course of 258. And Peyton Manning had 3 over the course of 292 starts.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. His history has run out of comparisons.
Well, I think where whatever his slow start and he's ordinary and, you know, there's other quarterbacks and they've all caught up. Well, I mean, let's see. Josh Allen's going to get a chance to prove it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this game, this next game comes down to is, okay, Josh, let's see it. Because right now the man is 7-2 in the postseason, both losses coming against Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no one else has been able to handle it.
Yeah, the only guy that's beat him is the GOAT.
Yeah. And you know, he's going to be the best in the game today whenever Tom Brady walks away. So, yeah, marvelous performance from the Kansas City Chiefs. Now just a two-point favorite against the Bills. And that, you know, I don't know how to read that. How do you look at it? Because the Bills, 47-17, I mean, they absolutely destroyed the Patriots. Patriots never in the game. They just blew them out from the get-go. Showed even, I mean, it was even more domination than what the Chiefs showed against the Steelers. Because obviously for, what, 25 minutes, the Steelers looked like they were going to make a game of it. They led 7-0 for 25 minutes, at the end of 25 minutes. So it looked like, oh, my God, this is going to be a rock fight. That was not the case. The Bills absolutely annihilated, humiliated a Bill Belichick coach team, albeit with a quarterback that's not equipped, at least at this point in his career, with the skills to really fight back. I think we see the difference between the quarterbacks, that they did a good job at Mac Jones right now. Yeah, I had this argument with Jeff Chedia earlier. You know, he's like, well, name a guy who's won. I said, I don't know, Andy Dalton? Right? Like to me, Mac Jones' career right now is somewhere between Andy Dalton and Tom Brady. And after that performance in the playoffs, I lean Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's doing well, and all the accolades around him go based upon what our expectations were. And make no mistake about it, Patrick Mahomes benefited from that as well, because there were people that were calling him a bust before he ever started the game. There are people that didn't like the pick, didn't like the trade up to get him. You know, so when he came out and was going great guns, it wasn't where everybody said, well, the Chiefs just drafted the record, what's going to be the statistically the greatest quarterback that's ever played. There was debate. And so he certainly benefited from it. And then went 5,050, won an MVP, and barely lost an AFC Championship game through no fault of his own. Right? So, like, he backed it all up. But for, like, the Mac Jones and the Josh Allen and the Justin Herbert, a lot of work to be done. You know, after his first year as a starter, Patrick Mahomes had checked league MVP, statistical phenomenon, playoff winner, and then next year he checks Super Bowl champion. Now, Josh Allen's got pressure. Can he beat Patrick Mahomes when it counts? We know he beat him in the regular season, but can he beat him when it counts? I think the 2 points, you know, the 2-point spread says that they've got a feeling that, yeah, he can, right? Does the 2-point spread scare you a little bit, Curtis?
It doesn't scare me because from the standpoint that I kind of, that's where I expected it to be. But yes, I think Vegas, we've talked about this with Eric Eager a couple of times, the idea that home field used to be 3 points, now it's about a point and a half. So it looks like Vegas considers this game essentially a toss-up, and the Chiefs get a point and a half for being at home. Yeah, it certainly is concerning. I mean, I will not be stunned. What I saw of Buffalo on Saturday, I thought this before last night's game, I will not be surprised if we're sitting here on February 14th, the first show after the Super Bowl, going, wow, the Buffalo Bills just freight trained the rest of the league.
Yeah,
I won't be surprised by that one bit.
I think they've got the best defense in the league, and so that makes them a more complete team than the Chiefs. But, I mean, I do think that this game is somewhat a referendum on the importance of defense, is it not?
Yes.
Right? That's a little bit like if the number one, they've got their big quarterback in Josh Allen. If the number one defense in the NFL can't handle, you know, the Chiefs, and if they can't handle the Chiefs' defense with their offense, then, you know, I think it comes down to the power of the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe not entirely. Like Bob Sutton, they couldn't win with the worst defense. But, you know, and this one, statistically speaking, is top 10 in points allowed. The Bills are good at points and yards. And so I do think this is as big a playoff game as we've seen. Are we just forgetting how big it was, Patrick Mahomes versus Deshaun Watson? Or the fact that the Chiefs blew their doors off and Deshaun Watson really was making no appreciable difference, that the Chiefs were shooting themselves in the foot to start and then blowing them up. Are we forgetting how big that was?
Maybe to a degree, but I don't look at it at that. I mean, the going into that game, it was similar in one regard, in which the Chiefs had lost at home to that team earlier in the year. But I don't think anyone thinks that going into that game that it was going to be a toss-up. I don't think they looked at the Houston Texans like they look at the Bills right now. Of course, the Chiefs did also didn't have the pedigree of having been to two Super Bowls and won one. I think this is the biggest game since, well, at least since last year. Yeah, well, I mean, well, no, I'm saying the biggest game.
That's what makes it hard. I know what you're saying. Set the Super Bowls aside as far as regular old playoffs.
Because I don't think anyone looked at the AFC Championship game last year as being this close. I think they thought the Chiefs won at Buffalo earlier this year. They're coming here. This team doesn't lose. They're ready to go. They're a game away. If Patrick Mahomes is healthy, because there was a question about the toe that he hurt in the against Cleveland, that they're going to be ready to go. And I don't get that quite that sense, quite that confidence. I had people yesterday, even when the Chiefs had come back and were leading until they really made it a boat race, they were like, I think the Bills are going to be favored next week. And I'm like, they're not going to be favored next week. But if the game stayed around 14-7 and the Chiefs didn't get that head of steam and they kind of fiddled with the Steelers for four quarters and outlasted them 24-17, you could have made a case that it would have been a toss-up. I think the Chiefs got that point and a half in the second half and in the last 20 minutes of game time last night.
I pointed out after on Saturday night when the Bills were blowing up the Patriots and Chiefs fans were like, oh, my God, they're in trouble, that teams that score 40 points in the wild card round don't fare well in the next round. Those that scored 40 and won, because there are two teams that lost, the 13 Chiefs lost 45-44 to the Colts, and the 2009 Packers lost 51-45 to Kurt Warner's Cardinals. Other than that, the 15 that advanced are just 3-12 in the next round. Now, of course, the Chiefs added their name to that mix as well.
If only they could have kept it at 35.
Yeah. I mean, there was part of me that's like, just win a ho-hum, ugly game against the Steelers, have everybody loving the Bills, even let the Bills be favored, and then just go drop a bomb on the Bills.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Does to me, too. The one stat that still does work in the Chiefs' favor is the one that I looked at also on Saturday night. Teams that win by 30 points or more in the playoffs, then have to go on the road the next week are 2-7. Now, one of the two wins was the Colts coming here in 2003, but one of the losses was.
By the way, that Colt team is also one of the ones that scored 40 in the first round and won.
Of course,
the next week.
That's just so crazy. But the other one of the teams that lost or that won as the home team was the Eagles in 2004. The Falcons rolled the Rams by 30 points and went to Philly and lost 27-10. So. And that's an Andy Reid team. So Andy Reid has been in the situation at home in the postseason with a team coming to his place that won by 30 the previous week. And in his one test, he's 1-0.
Yeah. It's going to be a great one. There's no doubt about it. Grab a phone line right now if you want to chime in about the Chiefs, 913-3810-810. You can hit me up on the Twitter, at Seren Petro. What was Andy Reid doing having Mecole Hardman taking a snap and handing off? Blasphemy, right?
Yes.
How could you possibly be doing something so foolish? Isn't that the only conclusion you're left to have?
That's yes.
No.
I mean that's. I was trying to find a joke in there, and I couldn't shake one out. But
I get it. It didn't work. But you know, they're going to not work sometimes. I'm not a big fan. Andy Reid said today in his press conference that, listen, Mecole Hardman played quarterback in high school. He's used to being back there. We've practiced it. We've run reps. That's fine, but my eye test says Mecole Hardman's ball security is not good ever.
No.
So I don't like that.
It's good compared to DeMarcus Robinson, but as a general rule, it's not very good.
You want to run that play, I'm fine if you run that play. I would say just, you know, find somebody else to be the point guy on it. I understand what you're trying to do, but that one, he scares me every time he has the ball. And he had a great game. He made a difference in flipping the field with his punt returns, had the longest and fourth longest punt in Kansas City Chiefs history, playoff postseason history.
Yeah.
Longest and fourth longest. Most punt return yards ever in a playoff game. By the way, you know who's pissed today?
Dante Hall.
Danon Hughes.
Oh, Danon Hughes. Who it would have been.
Danon Hughes has been knocked down. He had the longest punt return. He had the most punt return yards in a game. He's been knocked off by Mecole Hardman on those. He had the He had the longest and the third, and now he's got second and fifth. You know, like he got dinged twice. He got dinged all over the place by Hartman. Then there was somewhere else he got bumped. I was looking at all the records that were being set. I'm fine with the trick plays. I think Andy Reid knows what he's doing with them. I just don't like McCole Hartman being asked to handle the ball in any way, shape, or form.
No.
But I'll be on the end of it, but that's about it.
But I'll say I think that was the play that got the Chiefs going. I think that's – I'm guaranteeing I'm not the only person that believes this. I'm sure you agree with it as well. I think the Chiefs kind of staggered around for a quarter and a half thinking it's still nothing. The defense is still doing this job. We'll be fine. And then, boom, it was 7-0 Pittsburgh. And they went, all right, enough of this crap. We got to get going. And from that moment on, it was a boat race. They went down the field, put it in the end zone, and I absolutely think that that fumble touchdown was the best thing that could have happened to them in that moment.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I believe it. I believe that was the wake-up call. Kind of like they had to get to 3-4 before the wake-up call came that, wait a minute, we're going to blow this. We're not going to be in the playoffs if we don't get going.
Yeah.
They farted around, okay, we're fine. Wait a minute, we're trailing? It's like the fighter that has to see his own blood.
Right.
And then, oh, look out, he's pissed, here he comes. Yeah, I agree with that. And then just too much firepower.
Yeah.
I mean, the records are falling all over the place with this team. All over the place with this team. And I think it's amazing the stuff that's being accomplished. Travis Kelce has tied the record for a fourth consecutive game with 100 yards receiving in the postseason. He's up to fifth or sixth all-time in catches in the postseason. Like, it's amazing the records that are falling. And I got no problem with the Travis Kelce throwing the ball. He was a high school quarterback as well. You know, they've run that formation, and what do we say? The last time they ran it, they got stuffed, and what do we say on the following Monday? I'm telling you, there's a jump pass coming with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't really a jump pass, but he fired it, and, you know, Andy Reid's got a layer upon a layer upon a layer of each play. You know, as he so often does, Kevin Harlan nailed it. Andy Reid's calling a masterpiece.
Here's a fun stat. There's a site called Stats by Stats that's out there. It said, tonight the Chiefs had a running back catch a TD pass, a wide receiver catch a TD pass, a tight end catch a TD pass, an O-lineman catch a TD pass, and a tight end throw a TD pass. No other team in NFL history has done all those things in the same season. The Chiefs did in a postseason game. And by the way, they had 10 plays of 20 or more yards last night. 10! So much for the two deep zone, you know, blunting the explosive plays. The Pittsburgh had one.
Yeah, that was a masterpiece. Onward and upward, Buffalo comes to town in what is one of the biggest playoff games, right? Obviously, Super Bowls are bigger, but just the enormity of it, the beginning of the second chapter of Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen, the Chiefs trying to keep their stranglehold on the division. We'll talk about it with you. Grab a phone line right now. 913-3810-810. Hit me up on the Twitter. It's at Soren Petro. The program is off and running. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Curtis Siebel, man of the sports centers. The Drake running the operation today. 913-3810-810, talking some Chiefs football to get things started. A big, fat, easy win for the Chiefs. They take on the Buffalo Bills. What is next for them? Curtis, by the way, Drake's got an issue with one of your stats.
Can't wait to hear this. Hit me with a nerd.
Okay, well, you said, you know, the first time that's ever happened in a single season, all those different things, and you mentioned a tight end throwing a pass. He lined up under center. He was technically the quarterback on that play. If he'd taken a pitch or a handoff and then thrown the pass after he'd lined up his tight end, I'd be there with you. But he was technically the quarterback on that play.
I think that's a fair point because, I mean, it's fair both ways because Mahomes was on the field.
Yeah.
So it's not like, well, there was no quarterback out there, so somebody had to be the quarterback. Mahomes was out there. So I would lobby that. I would argue that against it. But did you see the stat that only three guys have ever caught and thrown a touchdown pass in a postseason game?
Yeah, I put it out there last night, too.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did. It's in the number.
Travis Kelce,
the
Trey Burton,
great.
who was the tight end who threw the Philly special to Nick Foles, right? Or is it Nick Foles? Did Burton not?
The one I had was Nick Foles.
Yeah, Foles, because Burton didn't catch one in the game. So it's Nick Foles, who caught one from Trey Burton, who lined up at tight end on that play and threw it. And then the other one, of course, doesn't everything come back to the Chiefs?
Yes. I just everything. Love it.
Marcus Mariota against the Chiefs, where he threw the pass. It was tipped back to him. He caught it and ran it in. Like, that was the moment when we knew the Chiefs were going to lose, even though they were still up in the game. I just love that that's one of the gems that's in there. Everywhere you look, like, for infamy, there's a Chiefs moment. Yes. Scoring 40 in a playoff game and losing. Yep, they're one of two teams to do that. Yeah. You know, it's all over the place. But, yeah, so that's legit. That's a legit, bone of contention.
I would say, Drake, in the immortal words of Michael Scott, why are you the way you are? Every time I try to come up and make something fun, you make it not that way.
That is also fair, yeah.
I hate everything about who you choose to be.
Love it. 913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Travis, lead us off today. You're in the program, Travis.
Hey, Petro. How you doing today, man?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
So, I agree with you guys 100%. I feel like the opening quarter, I think that the minute that Buffalo won their game the day before, I think they immediately started looking at Buffalo's coming here. I think that it took them a minute to realize they were going to be in a little bit of a fight if they didn't pull their heads out of their butts. And like Curtis said, once they turned it on, it was just game over. But something that stood out to me the most last night, I think, is Jarrett McKinnon. I mean, that guy was an absolute all-star last night, and he was doing things that I haven't seen a lot of our running backs do this year, which is show burst around the outside, around the corners, and then up the sidelines. And he was doing things that I don't think that – I'm not saying he's a better runner, but he's doing things that I don't think that the other three have the physical ability to do. And I think that brings a huge dimension to this team. He was hitting holes and bursting through them, and especially on the screens, and I just felt like he was a ginormous piece. And if he continues to play like that, I want to get your opinion. My fear is that Clyde's going to come back, and I'm not saying that he's not good, but I hope that they stick with the hot hand. I hope they don't play him over McKinnon just to justify the draft pick, but I hope that they continue to use him, because I think that he gives this offense a huge, huge burst in the backfield, and that's all I got. You guys have a great day.
I appreciate it, Travis. Always good to talk to you, buddy. And I like what McKinnon brings as well. A couple things. Yeah, I know people are thinking it. It's like, why'd you spend a first-round draft pick on Clyde Edwards-Helaire when you seemingly can get production from literally any running back? We've seen Derek Gore look good. We've seen McKinnon look good. We've seen Darrell Williams look good. At the end of the day, you know, if they win a Super Bowl, no one's going to mind. Right? Then it's all part of a formula. Just like Frank Clark, they overpaid for Frank Clark. If they win another Super Bowl, are we going to call it a great contract or a great trade? No, but it was part of the equation that led up to two championships, right? It's already led to one championship, so we'll never, you know, hate on it. And I think it'll be the same thing with the Clyde Edwards-Helaire draft pick. Listen, Jarek McKinnon is a guy that teams have really liked. The Vikings liked him. The Niners liked him. His problem has been staying healthy. His ability with the football in his hands has never been a question. He's always been a guy that looked explosive, looked like he could make big plays. The question was getting him on the field. And so I think, you know, you enjoy Jarek McKinnon when he's playing well, but you understand that he is not likely to hold up. But I think that's true of every running back, right? Some are more durable than others, but this is why you need a complete running back room, right? You need to be able to move on to other guys. One of the things that I'm always kind of intrigued by, and I think it was somewhat by necessity, but I'm wondering if there wasn't a way to get Derek Gore involved. Andy Reid seems to have his plays, and he calls all his plays no matter who the running back is. And he seems to like to have a guy. He seems to feel like a guy needs to get in the flow of the game. And he's going to run him and throw to him and ride him until they ask out of the game or get hurt. And then he's on to the next guy. And I wonder if he couldn't divvy up the workload a little bit more, have something for McKinnon in this game, something for Gore in this game, something for Clyde Edwards-Helaire in this game, something for Darrell Williams in this game, and get them all to the finish line healthier. Because here they sit, and one thing we've consistently seen, Jamal Charles hurt against the Colts. Now Davis hurt. Going back to the early days of Andy Reid, they seem to get to the finish line. What? Jamal Charles out, Spencer Ware in, Spencer Ware going down in a game. You know, we've seen time and time again. Now, part of it's just the nature of the running back position. And if Andy Reid said they're all going to get hurt, that's all there is to it. I've tried it a million different ways, and it doesn't matter. I go with the hot hand, or I go with the guy that I think's in the flow until he can't go. And then we're on to the next guy. That's clearly how he coaches. I wonder aloud, could he maybe get them all to the finish line a little healthier if nobody had to be the workhorse the way McKinnon was? If Gore had carried a little bit more of the workload, right? Hope Darrell Williams' toe comes around so you've got your full complements. Clyde Edwards-Helaire's shoulder comes around so you've got your full complement of running backs. But there's no doubt Andy Reid can get guys the football in a place. And great to see the screen game going, right? That's where he was really devastating. And that's where we felt that the Chiefs had the ability to be better. And they were great at the screen game. So, yeah, Travis, I like McKinnon. And I don't know that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to play again. I'm starting to wonder if it's just they continue with the day-to-day. If they don't run him out there at practice knowing, listen, you can't hurt anymore. We're going to do non-contact drill. I need you to run that round out here so we can call you a partial participant on Wednesday and so that the other team has to prep every running back we've got. And in reality, there's no chance of Clyde Edwards-Helaire playing.
I absolutely can see that. I won't be surprised if he plays this. I'll be more surprised if he plays and if he doesn't play this week. I think their best bet is that he plays, is he somehow is healthy enough to play in a conference championship game, and if they get past that, maybe some Super Bowl. But I would predict that he will not play again this week. The trend is not good.
Yeah, it looked like he broke his collarbone. He certainly went down hard, and he certainly was in a lot of pain just letting that arm dangle. And I wouldn't be shocked if they're in some kind of surgery that's necessary, and he's trying to gut it out, and or they're just this is a bluff just to keep teams prepping for him, because certainly the Steelers weren't ready for Jerick McKinnon.
No. And sometimes, I mean, it is kind of a marriage of an offensive line that seems to be built for what he was doing, but also his skill set. He did some things last night that nobody else on this team. He did some Jamal Charles stuff when it comes to changing directions. There was one play in particular. I don't remember exactly when it was. They were moving from left to right. I remember that. And he took the ball to the left side, cut up field, encountered a Pittsburgh defender, immediately planted the right foot, cut left, and then cut right again, past him upfield. And you really saw it on the ground level view of him coming towards you. Three cuts, bang, 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 and he got about 15 or 18 yards. And I'm like, that was almost all Jerick McKinnon. That was something, and that's not something Clyde Edwards-Helaire does. It isn't something Darrell Williams does. It isn't something Derek Gore does. He has that, not just the ability to stop and start, but the acceleration once he makes those moves. And you're just like, where the hell has this guy been all year? The answer, hurt, but boy, he added a dimension that I don't think Pittsburgh was ready for.
913-810-810. Let's go to Vicky. You're in the program. Vicky, what's going on?
Well, I totally agree with what you said about the running back situation, and I think it has relevance to my concern. My concern is that we had penalties yesterday on both the offense and the defense that were just dumb. And I wonder why we don't have more discipline within the structure of those positions. And it goes to Andy Reid's decision to play the way Andy Reid plays. If we had lost that game yesterday, and as we face Buffalo, I think those penalties that are stupid, not the ones that, you know, are ticky-tack or, you know, heat of the moment, but we had some stupid penalties yesterday, and that concerns me against the Bills, and I will listen to your discussion off-air.
Real quick, Vicky, how many penalties do you think the Chiefs had yesterday?
I don't know how many they had, but I know the three times I was throwing folded laundry at the television, all of them were stupid. They took place. You know, there was one where they roughed the passer, just dumb, dumb, dumb. And there were, you know, jumping the line. I know they didn't have a ton of penalties yesterday, but the fact that they had stupid penalties reflects a lack of discipline, and that scares me when you're going to play the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I hear you. Three penalties for 25 yards, just to be clear. So they didn't have a lot. And Vicky, thanks for the call. And yeah, penalties, I mean, they're a killer. Ask Mike McCarthy and the 14 that the Cowboys had. You know, what he thinks. You know? It's listen, penalties are never good. What they have, Trey Smith was offsides.
They had two false starts, Smith, Bell, and then there would be the roughing the passer on, I can't think of who was it, landed at the feet of Roethlisberger. I'm looking for it here. But
which I think is, you know, Bush League.
Yeah, it's like within the letter of the law, but you're like, really? Oh, Okafor. Yeah, he got 15 for landing at his feet, and I'm like, that's a little ticky tack. I get it's the Brady Bernard Pollard rule, but at that point, and that happened early in the fourth quarter. At that point, they'd had two penalties for 10 yards.
Yeah, so Vic, listen, penalties are always tough, but I can't get too down on a team that had three penalties. I mean, and one of them I think was ridiculous. You can say it's stupid, but you're fighting to the quarterback and you're falling down. What are you supposed to do? Like, you have no way to stop yourself.
Yeah.
And so I hate that rule. I mean, I think the rule, I've seen it, adjudicated that way. Every time, they don't care if you're just out of control and you're fighting by a guy and you lose your balance and you go flying in. They call that all the time. I don't know what you think you're going to do. It's just a way to bonus bonus the offense. But, you know, that one I don't mind. Trey Smith, you could tell he was the most upset guy over the penalty as soon as it happened. He was down on himself because of that. So I hear you.
And by the way, both of those false starts, they converted that series of downs into a first down. One of them was on a drive that ended in the Chiefs' game-tying touchdown. So the two penalties that happened before that had zero impact on that series of downs even.
Listen, Curtis, there's a bigger issue. There is a pile of laundry at the base of Vicky's television.
That was so funny.
She does not need to be folding things twice.
That's great.
Because of stupid penalties. So for the love of all that is good, for the love of Vicky's laundry, we would ask the Chiefs to stop getting stupid penalties. There's a bigger picture here you're missing, Curtis.
I'm with you. I often miss the big picture.
Yeah.
I don't fold laundry. I just take whatever I need that day and throw it in the chair in the living room.
913-3810-810, the phone number, 913-3810-810. More of your calls. I want to get to some more of the numbers of the game. We'll do that when we come back. You can hit me up on the Twitter. It's at SorenPetro, SorenPetro. Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, talking Chiefs football. Chiefs win and win easy as they advance to the divisional round. Sunday night, again, they get a primetime slot and will take on the Buffalo Bills, a game that should be, I think, the best game of the next round, to be honest with you. I don't know what game's going to look better than this one. 913-3810-810, the phone number. Let's go to Terry. You're in the program, Terry. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just got a few observations that I'd like to hear what you guys think afterwards. But the first one's on offense, but bear with me here because I was folding laundry last night while I was watching, you know. Yeah, sorry, I had to do that.
Well done.
Sure.
Hey, the first one is I wish we'd see more aggression on 4th and 1. You know, the 49ers run this play with Debo Samuel where he comes in motion. And as soon as the ball snaps, he's already just about to the quarterback and they pop it in his hand. He runs around the end. It's usually a pretty big gainer. And we could do that with Mecole Hardman or Tyreek Hill. But on 4th and 1, he punted last night. I'm thinking, come on, God, you got so many weapons. The second thing is on defense. I think if something, and this is just a philosophy one probably, but I think if 21 would just get his ass off of people, go to the receiver, he's just right on him at the line. And then he's doing everything he can just to try to catch up with the guy, and he gets burned. Why doesn't he back off about 3 or 4 yards and backpedal? And then when he can turn around and start running, he'll be in better position to make a play on the ball.
Go ahead. So a couple of things. We'll start with that one, and we'll work our way back. You know, it depends on the coverage that's called, right? If it's a press coverage, if you have a blitz, you have something you want to be right up there because you, if there's a hot route that they're going to run where he's going to just take a slant, you don't want to be giving him the quick outlet. You know, in conjunction with what kind of pressure you're trying to put up front, if this is one that, like, listen, all we're going to need to do is cover for a couple of seconds because we're coming with everybody. Well, then you don't want to give up something underneath unless you've got a big down and distance, right? It's what the whole 3rd and 27 thing was about with the Bengals. But that's why it's just press coverage, and the Chiefs do it a lot and they get handsy a lot. And part of the strategy is we're going to be physical and we're going to rough up the receiver and we're going to dare the refs to call it on every down. Sometimes you get a game like the Bengals where they do call it a lot. The rest of the time, you know, you get away with being able to be more physical. It's the same approach that we've seen Bill Belichick have for years. And I think it's an effective one. So to your point, that's the style that they play. And sometimes you're going to get beat. Like, they just blew the doors off the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Can we agree that most of what they're doing is working? At least in that game, for sure?
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of that philosophy of getting your hands all over them all the time. You know, if you keep your hands off of them, you're in more control of your body and a better position to make a play on the ball, which is the last point. I don't like that philosophy of having your back to the ball all the time and then trying to knock it out of the receiver's hands after he catches it. Why not be looking back for the damn ball? If the guy you're guarding is getting near the end zone and the ball's coming to him, it's already in the air. You know what I'm saying? You need to be looking back when he looks back. You know, you can't make an interception if you don't know where the damn ball is. That's just my point, sorry.
That is true, and I appreciate the call, and thank you, Terry. I do see what you're getting at, but I think you're trivializing the abilities of the wide receiver. Right? The guys that they're covering are not Curtis and me. Okay, they're super athletic, big, physical, strong guys that can flat out run. And part of the reason why you get your hands on somebody is to not let them get a free release, not let them get a full head of steam, not let them go where they want to go, you know, to disrupt not only their route, but to disrupt the timing with the quarterback. So, listen, there are a lot of reasons to it. If you have Deion Sanders out there, then you've got a guy that can probably play the way you're wanting to. But there aren't many corners that can line up that way. Yeah, you know, I think you're asking too much from the corners. And if you're like, well, let's go get some corners, okay, and get rid of who? Right? Because the cornerback position is a spot where the Chiefs have saved money. And you can't be the most expensive team when it comes to corners, the most expensive team at safety, at linebacker, at D-line, at O-line. You know, the Chiefs have some expensive, you know, players, and nobody wants to see Tyrann Mathieu go, and Tyreek Hill's up the next year. Nobody wants to see him go. Everybody wanted, you know, Patrick Mahomes played. Well, somebody's got to make lesser money, and they've gone with a couple of things. One, the linebackers are going to be really cheap next year because I think they'll walk on Anthony Hitchens, and Ben Neiman makes league minimum money, and you're going to have two guys on first-year contracts that are going to be starting, and Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, and they do it with their corners. And they're going to have to decide if they're going to pay Charvarius Ward. And the MO on this team has been that they let guys walk and they'll find a guy in a later round and plug him in. That's one of the things. I actually think the defensive backs are one of the tremendous bright spots for Steve Spagnuolo because the investment in the individuals is very minimal. I mean, probably the lowest investment in the league at that position. And yet they've been productive. Now, to the point of the Deebo Samuel, the Chiefs run those plays. They haven't run them as much, but they ran a lot of them with Tyreek Hill. You know, running the ball from the wide receiver position or even coming around to the backfield. Really what the 49ers are doing is taking a page out of what Andy Reid was doing with Tyreek Hill 5 years ago. Now, this is the question that we're going to watch in San Francisco. And I'll ask Roxy about it when we get him on. We're going to go to the Bay Area on the 2-minute drill because I love Deebo Samuel. I'm with you. Got him on fantasy teams and all that. I think he's a great player. And I actually think that's kind of the future of the wide receiver position is out of that slot. Giving him the ball to run with it. We see him do it better than anybody. A.J. Brown does it well. Both those guys are big, 225-pound, you know, physical, strong wide receivers. But we've seen Tyreek Hill do it as well. And I think that's – we've even seen the 49ers run those plays with George Kittle. And the question is, can he take that pounding and still be that effective as a wideout? Deebo Samuel battled injuries this year and missed a couple of games, right? Even with like 1,400 yards receiving, he missed a game or two. So that's the question is, can they take the pounding? I love the play once or twice every game. I think getting a couple of carries for those slot guys is always a good idea because it forces you to have to be assignment sound on so many guys and divert your attention to so many guys as a defense every single time. I'm with you. I love that play. I think the Chiefs have decided, one, by not having him return kicks and punts, but also by not giving him the ball running, that Tyreek Hill needs to be protected and there's a limit to how many hits he can take. 913-3810-810. Let's go next to Big T. You're on the program, Big T. What's up?
Hey, guys. Yesterday during the game, I believe Jones called a timeout and left. Just kind of, they said, the commentator said, I think Jones called a timeout. And then he was walking off the field. And then that was the two drives that the Pittsburgh scored on. Was there a reason he actually called the timeout? Was there a purpose for it? And did they score? Pittsburgh scored after that fact? Am I right?
I'm trying to look if they went ahead and scored.
Yeah, they did.
They did?
Yeah. That was the one that made it 35-14.
So they did score. So
don't you kind of feel like maybe Jones is like, oh, that's my cue. I got to get off because now they got to score?
What?
I'm not following that question.
It's a stupid question. That's why.
He took the timeout after the very first play of that drive.
Yes.
In which they stopped Najee Harris for a 2-yard gain. He and Frank Clark combined on the tackle, and then KC called their only timeout of the second half, and the only one they called while they were on defense at 8:46.
Correct.
Well, wasn't it because they were trying to change personnel and they weren't going to get him on the field fast enough?
That sounds like that might have been what it was.
Yeah, but he was out for two more possessions. He wasn't like out and then back in.
Two
on
more
series.
Snaps, you mean? Or he wasn't out for two possessions.
Yeah.
He didn't get a tackle the rest of that drive.
That's correct.
And didn't get a tackle.
What's the game time? I've got the game going
it was,
right now.
The drive began at 9:14 of the left in the third quarter. After the very first play, Harris left in for minus 2 yards, and then they call timeout.
All right.
Well, Jones called timeout. They said Jones called timeout. So he called timeout. He left the field, and then Pittsburgh went down and scored. But then on their next scoring drive, which Pittsburgh scored again, he wasn't on the field during that drive. He started the third drive that we got the stop and then left again. And then they ran out of time.
And so what is your – are you wondering, is he hurt? Is that the question?
I'm wondering, why did they call the timeout? Why would the defensive guy call a timeout and leave?
Yeah, well, my assumption is that there was a personnel change. I'm going to get to it, and I'll look for it and see. I'm trying to go through the game right now and get to where it is.
Can I ask one more question?
Ask me that one while I'm finding this.
Okay, so, you know, the big talk about why Bieniemy, Eric, is not getting a head coaching position, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My feeling...
Although Andy Reid said he thinks he's going to get one this time around.
Well, don't you feel that Peterson and Nagy and Eric have all been basically Reid's puppets, and anybody who's looking for a head coach knows that Reid is really the offensive coordinator, delegating every aspect of the game?
I mean, yes, I think the fact that Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy have been fired does not make it easier for Eric Bieniemy to get a job. Yeah, I think that contributes to it. I think calling them puppets is – there are lots of coordinators that don't call the plays because their coach is on that side of the ball. It doesn't necessarily make them puppets, though. I think that's a stretch.
Well, then what's the offensive coordinator title for?
Do you think that all you do is wing some plays on the sideline as the offensive coordinator?
No.
You don't think there's anything that goes on during the week that's being done there?
But how can you be a head coach and be 100% in your offense when you have to be 100% on everything? So wouldn't you?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that Andy Reid's not 100% on everything.
Let me just ask you a direct question. Do you think Eric's qualified for a head coach?
Yes, he's qualified. Would I hire him? I don't know. But is he qualified? Of course he's qualified. How could he not be qualified?
Well, because he's not making any decisions. He's not given the opportunity. It's not like Reid got sick for a month and Eric was the intern head coach and all of a sudden the team was inspired.
Andy Reid was a quarterback coach when he got his head coaching job.
but he was an offensive lineman.
Yeah, all right, that's enough. Now you're just talking to talk. Thank you.
By the way, from
that's just ridiculous. He's an offensive lineman. Yeah. What the hell does that? That's just stupid.
I don't get that.
How is Eric Bieniemy not qualified? You don't have to hire him,
yeah.
Right? I can see reasons to not hire him. I don't think he probably interviews well because I don't think he's the best at handling our questions, right? So I don't suppose he's going to be the best at handling owners' questions. But qualified? Oh, good God, yes, the man's qualified.
Yes.
He's absolutely qualified. Bill Walsh was, you know, spawned numerous coaches as well. And Bill Walsh called the plays, right? Like, it would be a question. Who's going to call your plays? You're going to call them? Okay, why do you think it'll work? How did it work with Andy? You know, tell me how you break it down. What all did you do for Andy? Yeah, all those questions get brought up in an interview. But to act like the guy's what? He just flies in on Sunday morning and stands there with a headset and doesn't do anything the rest of the week? I mean, that's preposterous, and I think, frankly, it's insulting on your part to suggest it. And now I know why you call him without even using your name, because I think it's cowardly. I think that's a cowardly thing to do. I don't know. I mean, yeah, the man is eminently qualified. Doesn't mean he has to be hired, but he is most certainly a qualified coach, and I believe he will get a head coaching job this cycle.